Meshech Chochma for Parshas Chai Sora. Let's begin.
Excuse me, Rob Berzon?
Yes?
Give me permission to record, please.
Yeah, that's... Oh, you didn't see my fingers going up?
Yeah, but I'm trying. Did you see? No. Technically, the software won't let me record.
Oh, I see what you're saying. What do I press here? We're going to begin in Perek Chof Dalet, which is the beginning of Parshas Chai Sora, with the mandate that was given by Avraham Avinu to his Eved, Zakan Beso, with a Shvua, in Pasuk Dalet, Ki El Artzi Vel Moladiti Telech. So there are two parts here to the Shvua. Number one is Lo Tikach Yisham Livni Mibnos Haknani, and Belinetta will talk a lot about that today. And then, Ki El Artzi Vel Moladiti Telech, Velakachta Isha Livni LiYitzchak. Now, let's think about this, says Rameir Simcha. El Artzi, that doesn't make any sense. Eliezer is being sent to Aram Naharayim. Although it's true that Aram Naharayim was originally the birthplace of Avram, but nevertheless, Hashem said to him, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha. And Hashem relocated Avram Avinu in Eretz Canaan. So what does it mean, El Artzi? I'm sending you to my land. I am in my land. I'm not sending you to my land. So Rabbi Simcha, you'll see in the Dibra Maschil Ki El Artzi, says, Hine Omar Avram Artzi. And the question is, he already left Aram Naharayim with the Tzivri of Lech Lecha, and he ended up in Eretz Canaan. Aram Naharayim is all the way up on the north. He says, Lirmos, the deeper meaning, it's very interesting how Rabbi Simcha, in a conversation that's recorded in the Torah itself, he sees it on two levels. On one level, it's a matter of communication. On a deeper level, it could be seen, like all of the Torah, as a remez for something that's going to happen in the future. Ki Aram Naharayim gam kin yeshel banov. And based on a parsha in Shmuel, Rabbi Simcha points out that Aram Naharayim is within the bounds of what's called Surya, and David HaMelech is going to send the troops up to Surya, and they're going to conquer that land. So if you want to use the phrase, the greater Eretz Yisrael, Aram Naharayim is part of that. She David asid lichbosh Surya v'tiei artzi. So the surprising comment here that why and how does Avraham Avinu call this land Aram Naharayim Artzi when he left that land in order to settle in Eretz Canaan? The answer is because the land of Aram Naharayim in Surya up in the north is going to be part of the expanded boundaries from the time of David HaMelech and on. So now at this point, Rav Meir Simcha addresses a different question. And he says, if you fast forward for a moment to Pasuk Lamed Ches, and this is the conversation between the Eved Avram and Lavan Besuel, and there he says that Vayeshbieni Adoni Lemar, my master made me take an oath, and when he tells over the oath of the master, he says, Im lo el beis avi telech, vi el mishpachti. There's no mention of el artzecha. He completely omits el artzecha. This is in the lashon of the Rishonim. They call it hashmotas hamachaber. You know, the machaber left out something. So when Eliezer is now relating what he had gotten as a tzivui in the shvua from his master Avram, he omits the word artzi. Instead, he has El Mishpachti. and Beis Avi and El Mishpachti. Says Rav Meir Simcha, a whole psychological analysis here. He says, Kedesh lo yechre af Lavan u'besuel al zeh. He didn't want to get Besuel and Lavan angry by telling Besuel and Lavan that your land is really my master's land, because ultimately we're going to conquer this land. That would have incurred the wrath of Lavan and Besuel. So that we see Eliezer is a very sharp politician. He's a diplomat. And he avoids saying that which might irk his hosts, because at the end of the day, he wants to get them on board so they'll agree to marry off their daughter to Yitzchak. V'itochen, and it's possible, ki Avram lo omar sheyelech el mishpachto. Interesting. Rabbi Simcha says, once again, if we do a comparison between the mandate and the oath that Avram Avinu as the master imposed upon Eliezer's Eved, and compare that very carefully, meticulously, to what the Eved said and convey to the name of his master to Lavan and Besuel, you'll find something very interesting. Avram Avinu doesn't say, go to Mishpachti. He says, El Arzi, meaning avoid Canaan. I want you to go to Aram Narayim. Nowhere does the Pasuk indicate in the Nusach of the Shvuah that was imposed on Eliezer that Avram asked him to go to the Mishpacha, get me a member of my family. But yet, when Eliezer tells over the whole story to Lavan and Besuel, again in Pasuk Lamed Ches, he says, El Mishpachti. So on the one hand, Eliezer is guilty of Hashmata, so to speak. You know, he omits Arzi, but the explanation for that and the justification is because he doesn't want to get his hosts angry. On the other hand, Eliezer adds something. He's not only Gorea, he's also a Mosif, adding something which Avram Avinu never told him. All Avram told him is, Rak el ha'ir asher nolad sham, right? When he said to him that I want you to go to Arzi and Moladati. Moladati means the city where I was born. But no mention of Mishpachti. And Rabbi Simcha goes very far. He says that the fact that Avram Avinu didn't mention Mishpacha was a deliberate omission on Avram's part. Misham yikach isha afim einam mishpachto. Avram Avinu was not makbid. He did not care, and he wasn't excluding non-mishpacha. You know, when I was brought up, I don't know about you guys, but we didn't marry cousins. You know, that was like a no-no because of retardation. I mean, I don't even know if to this day they've actually proven scientifically that's the case. I have a good couple of friends of mine that married their first cousins. It's not rare. Maybe Avram Avinu did not want Dafka Mishpacha. Who knows? Rak Shetia Mina Irazot. The city itself, Rameir Simcha, was the city where Avram Avinu was born. And although Rameir Simcha doesn't offer any explanation as to why the city of his birth should be significant, I would suggest that perhaps what he has in mind is that there's a genealogical relationship between the various members. They may not be cousins, maybe they're distant relatives, but they come from that city, and maybe there's something in the blood, so to speak, or in the atmosphere of that social milieu in that city, but it doesn't have to be your first cousin. Now we go back to Eliezer. Lachena Omar, ki anara sher yiraba nedivus la triach ula hashkos ligmal of ruyahi li nose le ben Avram ula havi le toch beso. Eliezer is absolutely sure of himself that he's going to locate the girl who will manifest these great attributes of nedivus. Nedivus means hospitality. And she's willing to put herself out, la triach. You know, you're talking about a young girl who has to pour from a gigantic pitcher of water after she draws the water, and not only to feed the people, but also to feed the camels. Ah, she's worthy of being married off to the son of my master. and come into the house of Abraham. Ubotach tutav bi'enei hanara v'yavil ischatenim Avram. Interesting. Not only did Eliezer, was he absolutely sure of himself that he would locate and identify the girl that fits the bill to be the marriage partner for Yitzchak, he was also convinced, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that the family would agree to give their daughter to marriage to his master's son. And at this point, I think Reb Meir Simcha is bothered here. How could Eliezer be so cocksure of himself? V'lo hoya nichush? I'm almost reading it with a question mark. I'm not sure if that's what he meant. But there's something called nichush. And nichush means when you sort of identify and you give a great deal of credence and significance to signs. You know, if something happens, oh, that's a sign from God. So one of my relatives, for example, was changing his job from one city to another city, took on a new job, and on the way they had an accident. And he was convinced that it was a sign from heaven. When I was sent as a shliach by this relative to go to Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir, because I was learning next door, to ask him whether or not maybe he should change his mind, and they needed him in the first position, maybe it wasn't right that he was leaving his position. So immediately, Reb Chaim said, Kilo nachash b'Yaakov. You know, there's an Easter of Nichush. You know, you're not allowed to interpret signs. And here Eliezer is apparently interpreting signs. You know, he's saying that if I find this girl and she'll manifest such chesed and such nedivus alev that she'll pour the water for this and the animals, I'm sure she's the one. And it's all min hashamayim, and therefore the family will have no ability to reject this marriage because they would, in a sense, be going against the will of God. That they can't do. He says, no, this is not nichush. Rak Eliezer rotzel li'amezer lohem asher hadover b'gzeir muchletes v'ashkocha protes. Omer shavrom tzivo likach mi'mishpachto mi'beis oviv. Here's the diplomacy. Here, you know, people who are cunning, they know what to say in order to achieve their goal. Eliezer had a goal. His goal was to get the mishpacha, the family of Rivka, to agree to give her for marriage. So what did he do? He said that Avram Avinu sent me to the mishpacha, which is really not true. Avram Avinu didn't make that condition that has to be mishpacha. But he says the very fact that my master, this Eliezer's words, sent me to the mishpacha, and I found this young girl, and she is so fit for the master's son, that how could you disagree? You have to understand that this is part of a divine plan. But again, it's not nichush. It's not that Eliezer was absolutely sure because he was watching the signs and let's see if she'll do this. That's a proof from heaven. No, no, no. This was just his cunning, his diplomacy, his method of getting the family on board and convincing them that this is min hashamayim. Now, I don't know if in your text you have a sentence that's in brackets. If you do, it reads the following. Ulai savar shezeh nirmaz bi'amro v'el molatati. What Reb Meir Simcha is offering as a suggestion, it's almost a footnote, he doesn't put it in the body of the text, is maybe Eliezer was not fabricating the truth when he said El Mishpachti. Right? We just presented the thesis that Avraham Avinu never said El Mishpachti, and yet Eliezer quotes his master and saying El Mishpachti, for whatever reason he did it, as we said before. But is this a lie? You know, you remember when Yaakov comes in to get the bracha from his father, so he says, Anochi Esav Bechorecha. So Rashi says, no, 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 he wasn't fabricating the truth. He says, Anochi and Esav Bechorecha. I mean, again, tell it to the Marines, but that's what Rashi says. Here also, Rabbi Simcha doesn't want to believe that the whole of Knesset Yisrael, which was going to be born and engendered through this marriage, came through a fabrication, because he convinced the people of Lavan and Besuel that this was from Hashgachas Hashem by fabricating the truth and saying a whole malarkey, making up a whole story that Avraham Avinu had sent him to the Mishpacha. Maybe, says, we shouldn't point such a guilt, a finger of guilt at Eliezer, because maybe he thought that when Avram says El Molatati, he wasn't identifying a location, a geographic location, but rather he was identifying the family. So that's why Eliezer was able to stretch the truth, Yesh li yashiv bedochak, maybe I could fit this in to the words of Avram. So he took the poetic license to say that he was sent to the Mishpacha. But nevertheless, Rameir Simcha is sort of vacillating back and forth. Vehu nichush. There really could be a finger of guilt here pointed towards Eliezer, that there is some element of nichush here. Maybe it's not a full-fledged nichush, but he is interpreting the stars and the signs and coming to the conclusion that this is from Hashgacha Pratis. This is a Gzeira Muchletes. It couldn't be that this was coincidental. This is all a sign from heaven. And then Rav Meir Simcha says the following. He says, "Okay, in Shina, gam bozeh shel nosan lo hatzmidim ad sheshola bas mihi." Now here also, we find, if we read the psukim very carefully, so let's take a look, if you can, at Pasuk Mem Zayin, and you'll see that in Pasuk Mem Zayin, when Eliezer tells over the whole story, the whole episode to Besuel, to Lavan, he says, "Veshalo so va'omar basmiat," and I want to know if she's really from the Mishpacha, "Vatomer bas Besuel ben Nochar asher yodolo milka." Is then it says, "Vasim hanezem alapa vatzmidim al yodeha." So the sequence here is that, at least in the way Eliezer relates the story to Besuel, to Lavan, is that first I asked her what her heritage is, what her lineage is, and only then did I give her the gifts of Nezem and so forth. Now, if we go back to the story itself, so let's see if we can find this. Just 1 second. Oh. Take a look back in Pasuk Chaf Beis, when the Torah actually relates the story sequentially, as it unfolded. In Pasuk Chaf Beis, "Vayehi kasher kilu agvalim lishtos," and now Eliezer is absolutely convinced, as we saw before in Rameir Simcha, that this is the girl. "Vayikach ha'ish nezem zahav," etc., etc. And then "Vayomer basmiat hagidi li." So what came first? Was it the gifts, as recorded here by the Torah itself, and then basmiat? Because again, keep in mind that Avraham Avinu never really said the word Mishpacha. So the question of Basmiat could be understood in one of two ways. It could be understood as if it was Nichush, meaning that Avraham Avinu, when he said Molatati, he really meant Mishpachti. And if she turns out to be from the Mishpacha, then I can give her the gifts, because then I know that the sign came from heaven that this is the girl. Or alternatively, basmiat, now that I know that you're the girl, I'm curious to know who's going to be signed on the ksuba. So here we have a discrepancy, because the actual occurrence sequentially was that first he gave her the gifts. He already knew, based on her nedivus lev, that she was the right choice. And only subsequently did he ask her basmiat. He was already convinced even before the Basmiat. But now he gets to Besuel and to Lavan. He wants to convince them that this is a marriage made in heaven, that there's no way that they could object to such a marriage. So what does he tell them? He tells them just the opposite. He tells them that, as we saw in Pasuk Mem Zayin, Vesh alo sa ves basmiat. Immediately I asked her, who is your mishpacha? Why? Because Eliezer already had prepared the groundwork. He had told them, again, we'll call it a fabrication for the time being, that Avraham Avinu sent him to find a girl from the mishpacha. And I asked her, basmiat. And she told us that she's from the mishpacha. She is a descendant of Haran, of Nachar. This is the mishpacha of Avraham Avinu. These are grandchildren of Terach, Avi Avraham. Ah, now they understood that there's a nichush element here. They had no problem with nichush. For them, they would read the signs. But in truth, Eliezer was much smarter than that. He didn't rely on nichush, as we saw in Rabbi Simchi says, velo haya nichush, meaning relative to Eliezer, this was not nichush, because Eliezer understood that he wasn't necessarily being sent to the mishpacha. So the answer to the question about smiat would not be nichush. It was just out of his curiosity. Who are you? Now that I know you're the right girl, identify yourself. But when he wants to convince Bisuel and Lavan, he changes the story. Again, part of his cunning. He wants to present them an absolute nichush. My master sent me to the mishpacha. I asked the girl, who are you? She's mishpacha. And then I knew this was a marriage from heaven. I gave her the gifts. Ube'emes lo tzivo rak ala ir sheba nolad. In truth, the tzivi of Avram was only of the city where he was born, but not the mishpacha. V'lachein nosan lo kodim sheshol basmiat. He himself, meaning Eliezer, in the actual sequence of events as they transpired, he first gave her the gifts and then he asked her who she is. Ki tia l'mishayia. In other words, she could be a daughter of anyone. It doesn't matter who her father is. Tinase l'ben Avram. She has the nediva slave. Eliezer here was not interested in nichush. He was interested in finding the right marriage partner. Haisha matima le'adono. And who was matima le'adono? The woman who manifested this intense, profound level of nedivus alev. Ubazeh, says Rav Meir Simcha, I got cash dividends from this insight into the parsha. Why? Mesulak mashehikshu b'tosvis leman diomer l'pnei noach nitztavol akishu v'lo tenachshu kosuv ayin shom. Tosvis in Masechta Chulin on Daf Tzadi Hei Amid Beis mentions one man diomer in the Gemara that not only are B'nai Yisrael, who have Taryag mitzvahs, enjoined from Nichush, but the Isur of Nichush and Kishuf and all that kind of sorcery and stargazing and so forth and so on applies even to the B'nai Noach. And it's a subcategory of Avodah Zarah. It's an auxiliary Avodah Zarah, and it's incumbent even on B'nai Noach. There's such a sheet in the Gemara and Chulu. And Tosus says that v'im tomar Eliezer hech nichesh. How could it be that Eliezer did a nichush when kol omer b'parshas mechashev ben Noach muzer olav, that even a ben Noach is enjoined from nichush? And the answer is that in truth she received the gifts from Eliezer even before Eliezer got the answer to the question basmiat. This was not nichush. Again, in terms of Eliezer's power of persuasion, he's going to switch around the story and make it appear like it's nichush, because he knew that would convince them. You might ask, Lifnaiver, maybe he's, you know, in a sense, tripping them on this violation of nichush, but at least one thing is clear, Eliezer is not guilty of violating nichush. And that answers Tosfos kash. Okay, now, I have a very exciting piece here to share with you in Rav Meir Simcha. We're looking at Perek Chav Dalet, back in Perek Chav Dalet again, Pasuk Zayin. And the Torah says that Avram warns Eliezer not to bring him a marriage partner from Benos Knan. Hashem Elokei Hashamayim Asher Lekachani Beis Avi Meretz Molerti Asher Dibel Evin Isha Ben Zarech Ha'estam Hu Yisach Malach Lefanecho Lekachto Isha Levni Misham. And again, if we go back to the beginning of the parasha, Pasuk Gimel Ashbiach Hashem Elokei Shamayim Velokei Oretz Asher Lo Tikach Isha Levni Mi Benos Haknan. Now what happens is that Avram is talking to Eliezer, and he imposes an oath on the shoulders of Eliezer. Al lo tikach isha mibnos kenan. And all the mefarshim from the Ramban and on, and Rav Shimshon Fal Hirsch, they all spend a lot of time trying to figure out why is it that Avram Avinu is addressing Eliezer. I mean, this doesn't make any sense. Eliezer should be the last person on the list. The first person on the list should be Yitzchak. Yitzchak is the one who's obligated to get married. And the father should be imposing an absolute oath on his son not to marry a girl from the Benos Knan. Now, let's mention here a few of the Mefarshim. First of all, why is Avram Avinu so concerned? If he's so concerned about the idol worshippers called the Knanim, well, guess what? In Aram Narayim, they were all our idol worshippers. In fact, as soon as Eliezer gets there, he wants to get rid of all the idols from the house where he's going to be lodging. So what's the advantage here of marrying a girl from Aram Narayim as opposed to Canaan? In both places, they were idol worshippers. So the Ran, in his drushos, has a breakthrough. I don't have it in front of me right now. And he says the following. There are two types of sins, two categories. One is a sin of das. It's an intellectual sin. And the other is a sin of musar, and Bein Adam L'Chavero, of ethics. Avodah Zarah is not a violation of ethics, it's a sin of das. It's up in the mind. Intellectually you believe that there's, Chas V'Shalom, more than one God. Avram Avinu was not concerned about Avodah Zarah. That wasn't his problem. He understood that a girl who would come into the house of Abraham would certainly be a believer in one God and would reject idol, and that's not something I'd have to worry about. The belief of a person is something that could be educated. It's not in the genes. It's not passed on from one generation to the other. You could have a father who's an Avodah Zarah, like, for example, Terach, and you could have Avram Avinu, who's a full-fledged believer with faith in God. But not so ethics. Ethics and morality are in the genes, and they are passed down from one generation to the other. Avram Avinu was hoping that somewhere in Aram Narayim, in the atmosphere where he was raised, and perhaps even the way Eliezer thought in Mishpacha, there would be some sort of genealogical inclination towards good midos, towards hospitality and patience and caring and sensitivity and nedivus halev, as we used the phrase before. And that's why Avram Avinu says, watch out for the Benos Kanan. Because the Kananim are guilty not only of sins of das, of Avodah Zarah, but also of sins of ethics as well. Chances are that you'll find a suitable marriage partner for my son in Aram Narayim, where they are idol worshippers, where their thinking is fakrumt. They have distorted understandings in the theological realm. But nevertheless, there's a chance to find a girl who's brought up and is committed to ethical and moral sensitivity. The Ramban says, why is it that Avram Avinu doesn't address himself to Yitzchak? Why is he talking to Eved's Kan Beso, Moshe B'Kol Sherlo? He's sending Eliezer, why not talk to Yitzchak? I mean, Yitzchak is the balabas. He's the one who's getting married. He's the one who has to know what the parameters are. And the Ramban says that he really wasn't addressing himself to Eliezer. Avram was really addressing himself, Al tikach isha mibnos Kenan, to Yitzchak. But once he was sending Eliezer on this shlichus, perhaps because Yitzchak needed a shlich, he himself could not go to Chutz Laaretz, that's a discussion unto itself, so he had to send a shlich to represent Yitzchak. So the main thrust of the Shvuah, if you go back to the Pasuk, is V'lakachta Isha Livni LiYitzchak. So the Ramban says once already he is imposing an oath on Eliezer to be a faithful Shliach on behalf of himself and his son Yitzchak to find a girl, he already adds into the Shvuah something that he hopes that Yitzchak will overhear from the sidelines, namely, Al tikach isha mibnos Kenan. The Ramban is still very difficult because, after all is said and done, it does seem like Avram is addressing Eliezer directly. To say that he's really addressing Yitzchak indirectly and he adds this to the Shvuah, first of all, if you look at the Nusach HaShvuah, the Reisha is Lo tikach isha mibni mibnos Kenan. According to Ramban, shouldn't he have said first, El Molatati Telech Velakachta Isha Libni Li Yitzchak? And then he should have added, as a tag on, Lo Tikach Isha Mibnos Knani. But this whole theory of the Ramban, that really Avram's intention was to address Yitzchak and not Eliezer Eved Avram, that's a little bit of a difficult pshat. So now we're going to look at Rameir Simcha in the Arsam in the Meshech Chachma. Now, in my edition, in Perikov Dalid Pasuk Zayin, you'll see two paragraphs. One says Asher Dibra Li. I'm interested in fast forwarding to the second paragraph, which in my edition it says Sham Sham. He says Madalo Tziva, and I'll add the word Avram Es Yitzchak Bino Shelo Yisa Isha Mibno Saknani. Again, the question that all of the Farshim address, he says, Mikan Raya, you have to be a halachist in order to answer this question. Put on your halachic thinking cap, as Rabbi Simcha always does. Lemarik, lived in, if I'm not mistaken, Italy some 6 centuries ago. His name was Rav Yosef Kalon, and he wrote a tshuva to a young man who wanted to marry a girl, and his parents objected. I don't know if there's anyone here in the classroom, the Zoom room, who has ever had an experience, either personally or in any of his family members or acquaintances, where the parents were opposed to the marriage. I see everyone shaking their head. No, we never had such a thing. Okay. All right. Let me tell you, it's not uncommon. And the law is, says the Marik, that kibud av va'em does not kick in. It is outside of the purview of the parents to mandate, to command their children as to who they should marry. In every direction. They can't tell them, marry this girl, and they can't tell them, don't marry this girl. Again, I could have said it in a boy and said I said it in a girl. And Rav Meir Simcha says the reason why Avram Avinu could not address Yitzchak and say, Al tikach isha mibnos Kenan, is because that's out of the purview of his mandate as a father. And Yitzchak would in no way be committed to oblige his father. And if he decides he wants to marry this girl as opposed to that girl, the ball is in his court. He can make that decision. A brilliant insight of Rameir Simcha. Except for one problem. And believe me, Rameir Simcha is very well aware of this problem. It's against the Pasuk in Chumash. Because, says Rameir Simcha, just fast forward to Perkhov Ches, when Yitzchak addresses his son Yaakov, he says to him, Lo tikach isha mibnos Kenan. Why is it that Avram is not going to address Yitzchak with the same exact words? He's going to use those words when he addresses Eliezer. when he himself, Yitzchak, when Yitzchak is in the next generation, the next link, addresses Yaakov and tells him, quote unquote, Lo tikach isha mibnos haknani ayin sham, four chapters forward in Perek Chav Ches. And here, Rav Meir Simcha, I'm not sure exactly if his pshat in the psukim in Perek Mem Ches, which we're about to open up a little bit to into Parshas Toldos for a minute, take a little diversion here to get to understand what was Yitzchak saying to Yaakov. And I'm not sure exactly whether Rav Meir Simcha sort of is so convinced in his answer to the question why Avram addressed Eliezer and not Yitzchak with this mandate not to marry a girl from God. He is so convinced that that's emes, that this is a raya brura, a biblical proof to a tshuva the marik in the 1400s, that he has to somehow farenfer, as we say in Yiddish, to somehow answer up this question about Yaakov, about why Yitzchak tells Yaakov, don't marry a girl from Vados Kenan. But honestly, even though I admit that one could say that Rav Meir Simcha now his back is against the wall, I think that what he's about to present is he is absolutely convinced that that's the way to learn the parsh. And he says the following. Let's open up for a moment to Perek Mem Ches. To Perek Chav Ches, excuse me. Oh, I'm sorry. It's actually at the end of Chayisara. Just 1 minute. Okay. Can anybody just tell me quickly where the pasuk is? I mean, I don't want to waste the time.
Isn't it at the beginning? Seems to be at the beginning of Kaf Chet.
Oh, at the beginning of Kaf Chet. Okay, great.
End
Let's see. It. Where is it?
End of Toldos.
Oh, okay. So it's not Kaf Chet. It's a mistake in the print. Somebody made a printing mistake. In my copy of Rabbi Simcha, it says Kaf Chet. That's a mistake.
It is Kaf Chet.
Yeah.
It's 28.
But which pasuk in Kaf Chet?
Start with pasuk 1.
All right, good, great.
First pasuk.
Maybe it's having trouble with this chumash. Just 1 second. Ah, okay, good. So it's next week's parsha. Good. Okay, so you'll see in pasuk aleph, Vayomer lo Yitzchak addresses Yaakov lo tikach isha mibnos Kenan. Fine. Then take a look at pasuk dalet. V'yitein l'cha es birchas Avram, l'cha ulezaracha itach. And now, at this juncture, at the end of Parshas Toldos, Yitzchak gives the birchas Avram he bestows upon Yaakov. Now, watch what's going on. Yaakov had taken the brachos from Yitzchak, meaning usurped it from Esav, but those brachos were v'yitein l'cha mital ha-shamayim v'shmani ha-aretz. Those brachos had nothing to do with inheriting the land. Only at the end of Parshas Toldos, when Yitzchak obviously identifies his son Yaakov, there's no fooling around here, and he sends him to get a wife. Little did you know he was going to bring back two wives. And here, he, meaning Yitzchak, bestows upon Yaakov Birchas Avram, that your Zaracha, emphasize that word Zaracha, your descendants will inherit the land of Eretz Yisrael. Says Rav Meir Simcha, that in order to appreciate what Yitzchak was telling his son Yaakov, in Lizaracha, you have to go back to Parshas Vayera. So we're really floating around here, turning pages. But if you open up to Perek Yud Zayin, he says to him, this is Hashem talking to Avram in Pasuk Yud, V'zos prisi asher tishmoru, tishmoru b'ni v'nechem, u'bein zaracha, again, underline the word zaracha chrecha, and it goes on and on and on, and then God promises the land to Israel, to the descendants of Avram. So in both cases, whether it's Hashem addressing Avram with the promise of Lizaracha, correct? Vizaracha Chrecha, and this is the bris of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Avram Avinu, or whether it's the Nusach of the Bracha of Yitzchak when he sends Yaakov out to Aram Naharaim to find a marriage partner, again, reiterating the Birchas Avram, meaning the bracha that Avram got from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lizarach. Says Rav Meir Simcha, if you look at the Gemara in Masechta Yevamos, on Daf Kuf, the Gemara says the following, that when the Pasuk back in Perek Yud Zayin says, V'nasati lecha ulizaracha acharecha es Eretz Knan, Lotisov Knanis de lo lezel zaracha basra. The Gemara says that the implication here in the bracha that was given to Avram, that I will give your zera acharecha Eretz Knan, the Gemara interprets that lizaracha means to the exclusion of a Knanis, a girl from Knan. Why? Because, says the Gemara, that will not be Zaracha. If you marry a girl from Knan, the children are Zarech Basra. Basra means after her. So if you have a marriage between a Jewish man and a non-Jewish woman, the children are not Jewish. Because Azlinan Basra, meaning it all depends on the mother. So when God bequeaths this great bracha of Lizaracha Etenes Aretz Hazos to Avram Avinu, it's only on the condition that Zaracha is not through a Knanis. Meaning, if you have biological, let's say, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, etc., that are not Jewish because they come from a Knanis, that's not called Zaracha. Says Rav Meir Simcha, that's going to shed a light on what Yitzchak was saying to Yaakov. If you look carefully, again at the first pasuk in Perek Chav Ches, it says, Vayivarech oso, and then it says, Vayitzaveu lo tikach isha mibnos knan. And in pasuk Dalet, V'yitein lechaz birkas avram lechol azarecha itach. What Yitzchak is doing is, I'm giving you a blessing, but I'm warning you that this blessing of Zaracha, that your descendants will inherit the land, is conditional. Because you have to make sure it's Zaracha, the same Zaracha that Hashem promised to the Zera of Avram, which the Gemara interprets to mean that if you have Zaracha through an Isha Knanis, that's not called Zaracha, and the deal is off, they will not inherit the land. So Yaakov, I'm giving you a great bracha, but this bracha is an opportunity such that you can guarantee that your descendants will inherit the land. But the deal is off if you marry an Isha Knanis. What that means, says Rav Meir Simcha, is that Yitzchak was not commanding Yaakov which girl he should marry and which girl he should not marry, because as we saw, Avram Avinu never commanded Yitzchak in that way, because as the Marik says, that's out of the purview of a parent. He doesn't have rights to impose limitations on finding a marriage partner. But when it comes to Yaakov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avram Avinu, sorry, Yitzchak is telling Yaakov, listen, buddy, I got good news for you, but I also have bad news for you, so to speak. The good news is that I'm going to bless you with Birchas Avram. Forget about Esau. He's not going to get the Birchas Avram. His descendants will not inherit the land. You're getting now a second set of brachas. In addition to the Tal HaShamayim bracha, Now I'm giving you the land. That's Birchas Avram. That was the bracha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu bestowed upon Avram back in Parshas Vayera. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a condition. And this is the bad news. You're going to have to forfeit your rights as a son to marry any girl of your choice. Oh, no, no, no. That's not going to fly. Because if you marry a girl from Canaan, my friend, the bracha is off. The whole deal is off. Because that's not Zarach. And Rabosa, I have to tell you, I get a little emotional here. I'm absolutely convinced that Rameir Simcha saw this as pshat. This was not just to plug up Akasha. You know, he had a problem because how does he reconcile the fact that Avram could not impose this oath upon Yitzchak because it's outside of the purview of a parent, and yet Yitzchak imposed this exact prohibition on his son, Yaakov. How do you reconcile? No. That's true. That's Akasha. And it has to be answered. But I think his answer is what he believes is really pshat in the parsha. Because when it says, Vayevarech oso, and then a few psukim later, V'yitein lechaz birkas Avram, that the bracha is that Lezaracha, your Zera Yaakov, will inherit the land, it's because lo tikach isha vibnos kenah. It's not what you call a tzivui, a mandate. A father doesn't have the rights to mandate his son not to marry so-and-so. But it's an eitzah tova. It's a very good recommendation. Because my friend Yaakov, you want to guarantee and clinch that this brach of Avram will come to pass and your descendants will inherit the land. Don't marry a Canaanis. That's out. Now, I just want to add one last point here. About Yishmael and about Esav and Yishmael. The Pasuk says that Yitzchak sends Avram to Paddan Aram to love on and to find a marriage partner. Esav is overhearing this. The entire conversation between Yitzchak and Yaakov that we've been discussing now in Parshas told us was overheard by Esav. Now, Esav, if you remember, was married to Benos Ches. And Rivka spoke about how life was just miserable for her because Esav and these girls from Ches. And it occurred to Esav that the reason why he's being rejected and that all the brachas are being bestowed upon Yaakov is because he, Esav, had married the Benos Ches. So immediately the Pasuk says, Vayar Esav ki berach Yitzchak es Yaakov, v'shilach oso paden arom l'kachas lo misham isha, b'boracho oso v'yitzav alav lemar lo tikach isha, v'bnos knan. Again, the two words that we have to emphasize here are b'boracho oso, that the bracha was bestowed upon Yaakov because he's going to be the one who's not marrying any of the b'nos knan. And Esav was married to the b'nos knan. So therefore, when he hears this, Vayelech Esav el Yishmael, and Esav takes a wife from Yishmael. Esav wants to ingratiate himself in the eyes of his father Yitzchak. That's one mitzvah he had, was Kibbutz Av. That's about it. Otherwise, he was pretty much bankrupt. And he was hoping that maybe Yitzchak would now include him, would allow him to re-enter the covenantal community, as my Rebbe would call it, and he would split the land of Israel with Yaakov and Yaakov's descendants and his descendants. Why? Because he's marrying a girl from Yishmael. Yishmael is already part of the royal family. He's the son of Avram Avi. And all this is because Esav understood that the condition of this bracha of Lazarach Atenas Aretz Azos was that he doesn't marry a girl from Benos Knan. So let him propagate from the Benos Yishmael. Okay. Now, maybe we have time for just to fit in one or two more pieces of Rameir Simcha. So if you'll take a look to Pasuk Chaf, to Pasuk Yutes, verse 19 in the same Perek Chav Dalet. It's very interesting, says Rameir Simcha, that if you look carefully at the storyline, you will see that Eliezer asks Rivka, Hagmi'ini na, meaning he wants her to give drink to him. Nowhere does it say that he asked her, Rivka, to give drink to the camels. Says Rav Meir Simcha, first of all, this teaches us that Adam Tzarech Lachash Li'atzmo U'Lishmiras Al Atzmo, that the primary focus has to be protect yourself. If you need the water to drink for yourself, that's what you have to ask for. But Achresha Bikesh, after he asks Hagminina, Nasnalo, and she gave him to drink, because he had asked for a drink. Aval Behemos, in the case of the animals, she took the initiative on her own. Why? Says Rabbi Simcha, again, the mind of a lamdan. Bishum tsar balichaim shemutal al acher k'mal abaylim. When it comes to the mitzvah of giving drink to someone, well, she has to worry about herself, and Eliezer has to worry about himself. He asks her to give her a drink, fine. But when it comes to the animals, this is not a responsibility that's exclusive on the shoulders of Eliezer as the owner of the animals, but rather this is a universal obligation that applies to every single human being vis-a-vis the animals. And that's called Tsar Bali Chayim. And he says that this really should shed a light on a sugyan bab metzia about Tsar Bali Chayim. And on the one hand, the Gemara says that it's not derech eretz to be matriach, your friend, that he should give water and drink and food to your animals. That's not nice. It's your primary responsibility as the owner of the animals. But nevertheless, the sugya decides that even if you are not given the mandate by the owner of the animal to feed the animals, you have to worry about the tsar bali chaim of the animals. Now, fast forward for a moment to Pasuk Lamed Beis. Vayifatachag malim vayitein tevenu mispo. Now we're talking about Eliezer in the house of Lavan. And Lavan removes the muzzles over the mouths of the gmalim, and he gives them tevin. Now, wait a second. Let's take a look at the very next pasuk, Lamed Gimel. Okay, then. And it says the following. After Lavan does what he does for the Gemalim, etc., it says, Vayusam lefanov lechol. Now, Lavan fed the animals. Now it's time to feed his guests, Eliezer and the entourage. And yet the pasuk uses the word vayusam. In Hebrew grammar, the active form would have been vayosem. Just like it says in the previous pasuk, vayifatach and vayiten, it should have said vayosem. What's vayusam lefan of lechol? In the reflexive, meaning, and it was given to them to eat, Eliezer and so forth and so on. Says Rav Meir Simcha, there was a kashrus problem over here. And Lavan was not going to put out food in front of Eliezer. Halo yada Lavan shebeis Avram nizharim yachilas isur. There are so many things that we eat, says Lavan, that in Beis Avram they don't eat. V'lo yada ma'litein lifneim. Lavan was not an expert in the laws of kashrus. He didn't know all the innuendos, what he could feed the people and what he could not. Lachain, so who is the chef? Who actually prepared the food? His asku b'achonas ha-macholam anshei Eliezer. The entourage of Eliezer took care of preparing the food. They knew the laws of kashrus. Now, I don't know if they kashrus is kalim. I can't tell you. Lazek Siv, and therefore it says V'yusam. Not that V'yosam. V'yosam would be going back on Lavan in the previous pasuk of Vayifatach Vayiten. It doesn't say V'yosam because the Torah wants to indicate that Lavan couldn't have possibly fed them. He didn't know what they would eat coming from Beis Avram. She'anshav samu lifnei Eliezer macholim kifi sheyadu etz Avram. That the people in Eliezer's camp, they knew exactly what food Eliezer would eat, because what was he accustomed to eat in the Beis Avram? She'tzach shchita. Wow, this is interesting. They shechted animals. Ubedika, now you have to check the inner organs of the animals, make sure there's no holes in the lungs. V'isar basar v'chalav, and you can't mix milk and meat. V'chayotzei basar. Fascinating. On one word, v'yusam, he builds an entire thesis, an entire theory. So Rabosai, if you can stay for 5 minutes, I mean, officially, this is the end of the shiur, but for those who can stay 5 more minutes, I just want to hop around one more interesting comment here of Rav Meir Simcha. And this is Chav Dalid Pasuk Nun Beis, Vayishtachu Arzo Lashem. Now, Lamala, he says, if you compare this pasuk to pasuk Chavav, Ksiv, Vayishtachu Lashem. Here, the Torah adds the word Arzo. Why? Nire, it seems to me, says Rabbi Simcha, Didamesek Eliezer, Shedola Umashke Mitoras Rabo Lachirim. The Gemara in Yuma says that this descriptive term of Damesek Eliezer tells us about Eliezer that he was totally committed to the Torah of his Rebbe. In a sense, you could say he was almost like a convert. It's hard to say if that's true or not. V'hayo de'me Avram she'evin maskis osur af l'shamayim. To place a stone on the ground and designate it for God, even for Almighty, the one God, and then bow down to it is prohibited. And that's a parsha in the Torah of Evan Maskis. Lachen, Berachov, when they were out in the open area, and that's the pasuk that he mentioned before, pasuk Chavav, there, Vayishtachu Lashem, there was no need to emphasize that there was no stone in the area that was designated for worship. Now, Chazal tell us that the Iser of Maskis, of Evan Maskis, applies even when a person has in mind bowing down to God. So therefore, when there was no Evan Maskis around, they were Berachov, they were out in the open flat ground area, then the Torah says, Vayishtachu Lashem. Here, the Torah adds the word Arza, Volkan Bebeis Lavan. They were in the house of Lavan, which was, help me out here with the English, which had a stone floor. How would you say that? All right, but you know the point that I'm trying to make. There's a fancy word in English, but the floor of the house of Lavan was made of stone. And therefore, there was no possibility for Eliezer to bow down to Hashem, even to Hashem, to the one God, because of the Iser Evan Maskis, that we don't bow down on a stone, and certainly not on a stone floor, even for the sake of bowing to God. And since Eliezer observed the mitzvahs of his master, the Torah went out of its way to say, Vayishtachu Arzo. And the word Eretz means Adama, means the ground, the dirt itself, as opposed to a stone in Evan. Shelo al haRitzpah. He did not bow down on the Ritzpah, on the ground, on the flooring, if I could use that word, because the flooring was a stone flooring. He had to go outside and bow down Arza on the Eretz, meaning on the dirt, on the soil itself, which is called Adama. Eretz equals Adama. V'zeh limud lo nizkar gabia ovis. He says, I don't understand. If we're deriving these halachic conclusions from the story of Eliezer, that we're enjoined from bowing down to a stone floor, on a stone floor, even for the sake of Hashem, why is it that we don't find that from, you know, we should derive this from Avram, from Yitzchak, from Yaakov? I mean, all of our halachic decisions and conclusions are always to be derived from the others. Why from Eliezer? Says Rabbi Simcha, an amazing chiddush. Mishum she'avos heim heim ha-merkava. The avos had a din, halachically, a status of the Beis HaMikdash. Wherever they were, the Mikdash went with them. And therefore, Rakan Sheliezer, Eliezer left the immediate vicinity, the proximate vicinity of his master Avram. He left the Makom HaMikdash. Once he leaves the Makom HaMikdash, Halach Chutz Me'Avram, then he is enjoined from bowing down to a Ritzpas Avonim under the law of Evan Maskis, which applies even in Hashtachavol Hashem. We could never have derived these conclusions from the Avos, because the Avos halachically were permitted to bow down on a stone floor, because wherever they were in the Mikdash. And in the Beis HaMikdash, you're allowed to bow down on a stone floor. This, by the way, touches on the whole issue about Yomim Noraim, you know. We do ishtachavah during the Musaf service. It's a real problem halachically, because our floors are made of shayish, which is Evan Maskis, and we're not allowed to bow down on an Evan Maskis even for the sake of God. But the answer is that in Mikdash it's allowed. And even though our shuls are Mikdash Mikdash, we still are very careful to set up a separation, and we don't bow down directly on the stone floor on the shayish. We put a towel or whatever it is. Okay, Rabosai, so this is where we're going to stop. And I appreciate that you joined me today. And I think we covered quite a bit. If we had more time, I would give you an overview, a summary of what we did. You'll have to do that on your own, because I have to teach the Daf Yomi now. Okay, then?
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Have a great Shabbos. Kol Tov. Shabbos.